Welcome to the Baby Weight Podcast, brought to you by Omaha Better Birth Project. Omaha Better Birth Project is a nonprofit organization. Our mission is to decrease inequities in childbirth by providing access to doula services, childbirth education, and prenatal and postpartum support for low-income and teen families. Find out more about Omaha Better Birth Project online at www.omahabetterbirth.org. Hi friends, welcome back. We're rounding out the month of May, which is marked as Maternal Mental Health Month. Maternal mental illness is characterized as mental illness that occurs during pregnancy and or during the first year after childbirth. It's said that 1 in 5 people suffer from perinatal mood disorders. Even with this high prevalence, it's little talked about. On today's episode, Emily and I will be interviewing Becky Baruth, a certified perinatal mental health professional and postpartum doula. She holds a bachelor's in psychology and a master's in counseling from Doane College. We will just start then. So, all right. Thank you, Becky, for joining us today. We're really excited to have you here to talk about this really, really important topic, maternal mental health. So what kind of got you interested in maternal mental health, and how did you get into this field?
Trial by fire. So thank you also, by the way, for letting me join you guys.
Yes.
So I started out in this field officially because of my own experience in mental health condition in the postpartum period.
Mm-hmm.
I had a rough go of things after the birth of my first child, and really ultimately I ended up going in retreat mode and didn't do anything. Work-wise, I just kind of was like, circle the wagons, keep my ducks in the nest, stay home, stay safe. And then eventually branched out, decided to have a second child, and then I was like, oh, I'll stay home again, because that was rough flat last time. Mm-hmm. So I actually officially started like getting into it in 2016. I had known about birth doulas, learned about postpartum doulas, and a little light bulb went off in my head and went ding, ding, ding.
That's awesome.
So can you tell us a little bit about the statistics around maternal mental health?
So, one of the things about the statistics about maternal mental health that's important to note is that it's actually likely underreported.
Oh, yeah.
So, when I say to you numbers, those numbers come from a study that was done in 2013 and various other things that have correlated with that. About 1 in 5 or about 20% of women experience it, and 1 in 10 men or dads experience postpartum mood or anxiety disorders. That being said, that's likely underreported, so it's probably more than that.
Right.
That's shocking to me. Like, I didn't, before I had my own experience, and my husband had his own experience with maternal mental health and postpartum issues, I didn't even think about the fact that dads and support people can also suffer from these things. I guess, can you speak a little bit more on what that looks like?
For the
dads? I'm interested in that. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
So it's actually not just dads. It's anyone non-biological parents. So any parent that is adoptive, parents that, I mean, you don't have to give birth or be pregnant to be affected, because the reality is that these conditions, these perinatal mood and anxiety disorders, are conditions that can affect any person at any time in their life. There just seems to be a slightly increased risk in the perinatal period.
Oh, okay.
And that affects anyone that's having a new family member in their life. So it can affect adoptive parents, it can affect foster parents.
Wow, very interesting.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Again, with dads, it's not an exact thing, but generally speaking, they are less likely to seek help. So they're going to have an even lower chance of being caught with it. So if they're struggling with it, they may not even, no one finds out, no one's screening them. I mean, screenings aren't done as often as they should be with pregnant people.
Mm-hmm.
Their partners get screened even less than that.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. So, my goodness.
What do you see as kind of the biggest barriers for people to seek support and help?
So I think the thing that's probably the biggest barrier that I have witnessed, and it was true for me as well, is that when you're suffering from postpartum depression or an anxiety disorder, it doesn't feel like something's wrong. It feels like it's just you.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's you. It's who you are. It feels like it's part of you. And for me in particular, and I heard this from others, that because it was my first baby and I'd never been a mother before, I just thought, well, this must be what motherhood is like.
Yep.
And
yeah.
I hear that all
the time.
I
felt the same way.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just like, oh, this must be how it goes.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary.
So just
just kind of assuming that what's happening to you is what happens to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we very much know that that's not the case. Yeah.
And then the other thing that I want to know is that there's this thing called scary thoughts, and I don't want to get away without saying this, because scary thoughts is something that I think is probably one of the biggest barriers, because those scary thoughts pop into the heads of these new parents, and they're so scary and distressing, and sometimes extremely distressing thoughts, that they are very fearful that by telling anybody that they're having these thoughts, that their baby will be taken away from them.
Yeah.
So if you're struggling with intrusive thoughts, that's probably like one of those hurdles. Now, it's not actually terribly common, although it does happen. And what happens is that you may have always been having those scary thoughts, those intrusive thoughts. You just didn't ever have them about a baby before.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't feel like a problem.
So what are some ways that you think people could be proactive with their mental health?
So I guess the thing that would probably be key is that if you know that you are at a higher risk, and there's a lot of risk factors that could increase your risk for developing a perinatal mood and anxiety disorder. So what I would say is if you add a higher risk, you should probably seek out a therapist and just kind of have someone on board so that you have a, it kind of already lined up.
Okay. During pregnancy?
During pregnancy,
okay.
And actually, really, if you know you're at high risk, maybe even before you start. It's called preconception planning.
Yeah.
And so you actually seek out a therapist that is familiar with working with perinatal issues, and you explain your risk factors, and then you develop a plan in concert with them. Now, what I will say, though, is the other piece of that is if you're on a medication and it's working for you, find a provider who feels comfortable continuing to prescribe it to you throughout your pregnancy and during the postpartum period, because there are plenty of medications that are safe to take and effective, but it's really, really key to not change it during pregnancy. And unfortunately, a lot of times that is a common response that some providers have, is to take you off or reduce your dose.
Yeah.
That's just not recommended.
So. Interesting.
Okay. Are there any sort of natural things that people can do?
I mean, I'm always back to basics. I mean, I'm talking to this to my postpartum clients, my therapy clients, like, you know, good nutrition, make sure you're getting quality sleep, make sure you're getting some movement. We don't say exercise, it's a bad word, we say movement, so it could just be simple walks. And really, when you're pregnant, all people should be planning this way.
Right.
They should basically, all pregnant people should be planning or preparing, having some sort of care plan in place for their mental health in the postpartum period. Because everyone's at risk for it in some measure or fashion. And you'd much rather be well supported and well protected going into your postpartum period than to have it catch you off guard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there some sort of signs that maybe partners or other people in the family can be looking out for? You know, for the new mom in the family, just to kind of be like, oh, that might be a red flag. You know, maybe we should go talk to somebody.
I always say this to my postpartum, well, it's my postpartum clients before they become postpartum. I always tell the partner, you know your person the best. So personality needs to remain intact. So we're going to be tired. We're going to be sleep deprived. We're going to be not eating, maybe not showering. All of these things in everyday life might be a sign that something's wrong with our mental health, but in postpartum it's actually normal. But your personality should remain intact, so you should still find the same things funny. You should enjoy, you know, a lot of the same activities. You might be too tired to do them, but they sound good to you. And because your partner knows you best, they are really good at, like, picking up on those changes. The other big thing is sleep. Sleep is, like, the best indicator of mental well-being. That's true for everyone and anyone listening. It doesn't just have to do with perinatal mood disorders. If you cannot sleep, you should be passing out when you have a new baby in the house.
Right.
You should basically, baby's asleep and I can't keep my eyes open. If that's not happening and you just find yourself ruminating or having the thoughts that are just keeping you from sleeping, or you just have too much energy, you just can't slow down, that's a red flag that both partners can look for, and you and yourself.
I had to tell my husband after our first, we were very much in the same boat. We didn't know what I was experiencing was not normal. And looking back, I most definitely had a perinatal mood disorder. And so with my second, we were very proactive, and we talked about, these were things I noticed you know, looking back on my first postpartum experience, these were things I noticed that happened. And I told him, if you see these things, let's do something. Let's make a plan. Let's go. Let's do something about this. And thankfully, we didn't have to. But even just having that conversation was really important to us. And I think that's something that maybe a lot of families don't even think about doing. Mm-hmm. But I think it could be a huge helping hand for families that are struggling if they have more than just themselves trying to recognize something's happening.
I think you really touched on something that's really important to kind of highlight too, is that you know yourself as well. And mm-hmm. so, you know, maybe even just like writing down some different things that, that are really what makes you who you are and what makes you feel good mm-hmm. on a regular basis. And those are the things that you should still be enjoying and doing when you're having your baby. You don't have as much time.
Right.
You should still be like, yeah, I still want to listen to my favorite podcast. I love that podcast mm-hmm. or whatever.
Right. Well, and I think maybe in our case, the support partners and my family members, a lot of time didn't want to hurt my feelings by mm-hmm. or aggravate an already delicate situation by saying, are you sure you're okay? You mm-hmm. know, and that's hard to navigate. What are some maybe ways that you can suggest bringing it up to the partner? Or do you have a way that you talk to your postpartum clients about? Or is it more if you broach the subject with the perinatal person and they're not responding, do you go ahead and just call their therapist? Do you call their OB?
You mean as the
loved person? Yeah.
Well, so I guess it's going to really depend on the dynamic of the relationship mm-hmm. between you and your support person. Because if you guys have that kind of relationship where he or she could just say, hey, something's not right about you and I'm going to call, great. Yeah. But again, I come back to your partner will know best how to approach it. And what you said about having people being cautious or concerned about asking you how you mm-hmm. are doing, it never hurts to ask how someone's handling the transition to parenthood. Mm-hmm. I mean,
that's good.
We need to be asking that more. Yeah. And if you tick somebody off because you ask, so be it. At least you've asked and you've given them an open door. But it might also help to kind of frame it as, how are you doing? How are you handling things? Mm-hmm. Really open-ended, not, are you experiencing depression? Because that can be off-putting and make a person think, oh gosh, I'm going crazy. My family thinks I'm crazy. No, how are you doing? Mm-hmm. How are things going? Yeah. How are you sleeping?
Right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I had told my husband when we talked about, you know, these are kind of some red flags that I think we should be looking for. I had told him, you know, if I'm not responsive to your suggestions, push harder because I can see myself as an individual being like, I'm fine. Mm-hmm. And you know, like you said, he knows me best. So if he's thinking and something's making him, you know,
feel
uncomfortable
like
and, you know, questioning the mm-hmm. situation, I told him I wanted him to push until we get deeper. You know, go talk to
somebody. And you had pre-planned that. You had mm-hmm. discussed that ahead of time. And so you, if it would have come up, you could have been like, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I actually have a contract or agreement. I shouldn't say a contract, but I have agreement that I sign with all of my postpartum clients. It's because I work for them in the capacity as a doula, and I have a different role there, but I call it my mental health agreement. And I have them give me the names and numbers of two people that they trust with their mental health care. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of spell out, if I have concerns, I'm going to come to you first, meaning the client. If I can't get you to get help, or as the nature of some of these conditions are that you are unwilling to get help, mm-hmm. then I will enact this agreement and I will contact one of these two people. And usually they pick their spouse or partner.
Right.
And then the other person is like a mom or a sister or a best friend.
That's really interesting.
I haven't ever had to enact it because they always, you know, it's like, I get them thinking about it in the prenatal.
Yeah.
We're talking about this. This is a subject that we're going over. So they're not that caught unaware when I'm checking in.
When you're bringing it up. Yeah.
Right.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's nice. So if a pregnant person does feel that they're not themselves, if they're concerned, do they reach out to a therapist if they haven't seen a therapist before? Would it be best to go to an OB? Does it matter?
So
who
I always,
they go to?
I would say the answer to that question is they need to go see whoever they can get in to see first.
Okay.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So whoever that is, start with the easiest one.
Time is of the essence.
Because, yes,
mm-hmm.
The sooner they get a treatment plan lined up, the sooner they'll start to feel better and feel more like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, starting with, you know, your OB or your GP or your midwife, you can probably get medication if that feels like that's the appropriate path for you pretty quickly, especially sleep aids. Like, they're pretty
mm-hmm.
easily able to. But if that happens, you need to also simultaneously be getting on the schedule of a therapist and or preferably and a psychiatrist that actually has training in the field of perinatal prescribing. So
right.
That's what, like, the next step. But I wouldn't want anyone to think, oh, I have to get in it because therapists have waiting lists. Psychiatrists have waiting lists. You can
mm-hmm.
sometimes see an APRN. There's actually several APRNs in the Omaha metro area that are have special experience in working with the perinatal population and prescribing to them. And so you can sometimes get into them a little more quickly.
Yeah. I found that the OB is often one of the quickest ones to get into.
Typically, yes.
When you're having any struggles or issues. But you can also bring this up. And I thought it was interesting with both my kids. When, you know, because you see your pediatrician more than you see your own doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And our pediatrician, every time I would bring my infants in from the newborn check, you know, the 2-week check, the 2-month check, our pediatrician was asking me how I'm doing.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought
I love your pediatrician.
I
mm-hmm.
thought that was really, at first I didn't realize what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
But looking back, I'm like, oh, that's what he was doing. Because he would ask me, are you sleeping? Like the kind of those just, how is your mental health right now?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Sort of questions. And I wish more pediatricians would do that because I'm certain that if he saw a red flag, he would have referred me to somebody or suggested something. And
was that with your second child?
Both of my kids.
But it didn't.
With
it didn't.
My first, I kind of just lied.
I see. And now, yeah. Thank you, Emily. Go ahead.
I was going to say, in our case, our pediatrician did the same thing, but I would bring my husband with me. He wouldn't ask me those questions.
Oh, no.
He asked my husband, how is she sleeping? How is she, yeah, how is she doing? How is she this, that, or whatever? And I was just like, okay.
Oh,
and
okay.
He straight up told me, he was like, if I ask you, you're just going to lie to me and tell me you're fine.
Oh, I see.
Which does happen.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay.
Face example, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, in that case, I thought that was.
That's interesting.
Yeah, an interesting approach.
Mm-hmm.
I would appreciate it if he would ask me and then asked my husband
right.
for confirmation. But, yeah, that was very interesting,
That's
I thought,
interesting.
Too.
What you
mm-hmm.
just said is what I would actually prefer, is to ask the person you're concerned about and then ask for confirmation from someone
mm-hmm.
who they trust or is in the room with you. Because, yes, you will get one answer and then you'll get a little bit more. Because a lot of times, like I already said, the partners are aware that something's off with their loved one, but they just need that in.
Yeah. You might have the loved one behind them going, shaking their head. She's not sleeping. Very good.
That's really interesting.
I had another question for you. We know that if you have postpartum depression in after your first pregnancy, you know, you could also have it again. But does it also run in a family? Is it if your mom suffered from it, are you more likely to? Is that something, would that consider you high risk, I guess, is my question.
Yes, yeah, so I would say there are a number of risk factors that increase your risk of developing it. And family history is definitely one of them. And remember, perinatal mood and anxiety disorders are just mood and anxiety disorders with a perinatal spin. They're more common in the perinatal period. They're at an increased risk, I should say that, just because of the perinatal period, because of all the other things that are going on, the sleep deprivation, the isolation, the stressors, the major life
mm-hmm.
upheaval because you've added a child to your life or lost a baby. I mean, and then you've got increased risk there.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yes, there is a correlation between family members having had experiences with depression and anxiety and you as well. Specifically postpartum, yes. The other
okay.
one that's kind of random that I just would throw out there is that if you had significant premenstrual emotional dysregulation,
mm-hmm.
and when I mean we're talking like severe, not just like grouchy, but you know, where you were really, really like down in the dumps, then you might be at kind of an increased risk. There's a variety of risk factors. And actually one thing that I was going to mention is there's this checklist that Postpartum Progress does that's really fabulous. I think you should include for your viewers or your listeners to follow up fine, where you can actually fill it out, and it actually goes through all the risk factors, and then you can see what your risk factors are, and then you can bring that form with you to talk to a provider.
Do you do that prenatally?
Mm-hmm.
And then also
all the time
just
keep doing
just
it
keep doing. No, I mean really, it wouldn't be, if you are really a good planner, go ahead and do it before you decide to become pregnant, and then do it throughout pregnancy and then into the postpartum period for the first full year, about every 3 or 4 weeks or so. Just check in with yourself.
That's awesome.
Wow,
yeah.
Okay.
Well,
it's
definitely
really easy. It's not like it's complicated.
Yeah. Well,
it might be a little distressing to read through and think, oh gosh, I am at increased risk. But think of it as this way. You now know and you can make a plan.
Yeah.
If you learn that you are at increased risk.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll definitely link that into our show notes, and so that our listeners can grab a hold of that checklist. That sounds like it's a really useful benefit and useful tool for them. So,
mm-hmm. All right. Well, do you have any other, resources or recommendations for people who might want to learn more about maternal mental health, or who are, you know, thinking about it? It's on their minds.
So I would say the gold standard would be Postpartum Support International.
Yeah.
They do a fantastic training, but they have just like free resources on their website too that gives you the, like, kind of breaks it down into simplistic terms, what each different, because there's many perinatal mood anxiety disorders.
Mm-hmm.
Depression is the one that most people are aware of. It's the most common one. But there are lots of varieties, if you will, and a lot of them are comorbid, which means that they occur at the same time within the same period of time. And
okay.
So if a person wants to learn, sign up for one of their trainings. If you just want to read, they also have support groups that are online.
Mm-hmm.
Right now they're online, so I guess
that's great.
Probably do in-person ones, but none here locally, but
mm-hmm.
accessible to anyone. And they have a wide variety, so you can find the group that fits your exact situation.
That's awesome.
Very good. Yeah, we'll definitely link that too in the show notes. So,
Any other information or anything you have for us?
Yes, actually, I do. I wanted to talk just slightly more about the scary thoughts, because we sort of talked about it a little bit and I didn't get to finish up. One of the things that I wanted to point out is that a lot of times there's a thinking in the brain of someone experiencing these scary thoughts, that the scary thoughts mean that they are at risk to hurt their baby.
Mm-hmm.
But that is actually not true. Generally speaking, if the thoughts are distressing to you as the person having them, then your risk to enacting on these thoughts is actually low.
Interesting.
And a lot of times people are, that's kind of where that like afraid to tell someone what you're thinking comes from, and that fear of them taking the baby away, because unfortunately, I think the tides are turning and I think the knowledge is shifting, but I think there's still an amount of providers out there that don't know that, and will hear a person talking about these scary thoughts associated with their baby and assume that that means that they're experiencing psychosis, which puts them at increased risk of actually taking action. That's not how it works. So that's something that I would...
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I've heard about these obtrusive thoughts or intrusive thoughts, kind of something along the lines of in your everyday when you're driving down the road and being like, what if I just swerved my car into the curb or into this other car? I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about in an everyday sense of an intrusive thought. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And in fact, actually, and I did mention this earlier, but just as a reiteration, that it might be the first, you might have had these intrusive thoughts periodically throughout your life all the time, didn't even think anything, because the thought comes in your head and you're like, well, that's weird.
Yeah.
Whatever that was, but it's the first time it's about a baby.
Yeah.
A puppy or a baby.
Yeah.
Maybe about other babies. When those thoughts start, and then suddenly you're having thoughts of horrible things happening to babies all around you.
Yeah.
It can be very upsetting.
Yeah. I shared about this recently on another one of our social media outlets, but I don't know if you'd call me a victim. I was a person who had these intrusive thoughts when I had perinatal depression.
Mm-hmm.
I was pregnant with my third, and I had very scary thoughts about myself and my kids. And it took that for me to really reach out because of because of the stigma or because I was worried about what the doctor would say about me taking care of my kids. Mm-hmm. And I so badly wanted to tell them, like, I'm a good mom, I promise. You know, I love my kids. But yeah, it is very scary. And it was scary enough that that was the one thing that caused me to go, this isn't normal. This mm-hmm. isn't me. Mm-hmm. I need to get help. Yeah. So
that what you just said, this isn't me. That's key. Cause you recognize that these thoughts are not, they're not, you don't want these thoughts to happen. You are not right. seeking these. This is not, this is distressing to you.
Yeah.
Very unhappy. And, but it can be hard to distinguish. And there are probably people out there right now in the world that have these horrible intrusive thoughts and they really truly believe that it's who they are and that there's something wrong with them.
Yeah.
And anything, that's probably the thing I want to drive home the most is that, you know, proper diagnosis and getting in to see a professional who can help you kind of tease this out because it is mm-hmm. somewhat complex. But it's very, very likely that it's not part of
it's not
that
you.
It's that you're not at risk for your baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This was really enlightening and such an important topic that it isn't talked about enough.
Yeah, we couldn't possibly talk about it.
More. No, we could go on and on and on, I think, about this, and we should, as a society, go on and
yeah,
on about
this. Yeah,
it
shouldn't just be in May.
Yes. So, yeah, thank you again for coming.
Yeah,
and
thanks for having me.
Yes, we will probably do this again in the future.
Yes.
I'd love to.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. While the month of May is officially designated as Maternal Mental Health Month, this conversation should be ongoing. If you or someone you love is experiencing signs or symptoms of a perinatal mood disorder, please seek out professional support. You can find the links to all the resources mentioned in this episode in the show notes. We'll be back next Thursday with a brand new episode.